Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. It is Wednesday, September 12th, 2018, for those that don't have a calendar or phone in front of you. I am Josh Nason, of course, your writer. Writer, podcaster, editor for the website, and former writer for Fight Magazine, Bloody Elbow, Bleacher Report, and a bunch of other websites that no longer exist. Hope you guys are having a great week and heading into fall. Actually, we're into fall, and football season started, and lots of big fights in the horizon, the final 4 months in the MMA calendar, and lots of stuff happening this month. We have a Bellator making their debut on DAZN, so we'll be talking about that later in the month. Obviously, the road to Khabib and Conor is getting paved a little bit, so we'll talk about that more in the month. And really what this conversation is all about is this past weekend and a fun event that, look, I was a little bit of a hater on it. I don't want to say too much of a hater. I wasn't out, you know, complaining too much, but I was not that excited about UFC 220. And I can't remember the name now. What is it? 220? I don't know. UFC Dallas coming up this past weekend. And I wasn't really that into it. I think it was 228. Really not that excited about it. And after the event, it was like, wow, that was awesome. It was a lot of fun, a lot of quick finishes, and a lot of just momentum. It was just a great show, right? And stakes. That's what I was thinking of, stakes. And contenders were really made, and there's questions about who could get title shots and all this stuff. And obviously, the main event, Tyron Woodley cementing himself as a budding star and somebody that could make some interesting waves here in the next the next year or so, depending on how he's booked. So help me break all that down and talk about that and geek out a little bit about that and a bunch of other topics. Old friend Aaron Bronstetter of TSN Sports. We've seen him on all over the place with UFC fight coverage, with talking with Dana White and talking with all types of other fighters, doing some really great stuff and filling a void that had kind of been there for quite some time. So Aaron and I talked, we were going to talk originally for like, I think about half an hour, and ended up talking about, you know, almost 50 minutes. So we jump all over the map. We talked about 228 this past weekend, and it is 228, right? I'm going to actually check that right now. Yeah, 228. Sorry about that. 228. So we talked all about that, some of the key topics coming out of that, not just Woodley, but a little bit about Darren Till. We talk about, obviously, Jessica Andrade, Tatiana Suarez, and a little bit about Aljamain Sterling. So we jump around with that, a little bit of McGregor, Khabib, and just kind of like UFC business stuff in general. We veered off in that conversation as well. So this jumps all over the place, but if you're into the sport, you guys are going to really enjoy this. So without further ado, let's get to it with my talk with Aaron Bronstetter of TSN Sports. Let's go. Well, I will gladly admit that going into this past weekend, I was not that excited about UFC returning. Just the card didn't really do that much for me for whatever reason, and just wasn't that into it, but I'm happy to say that after the show, I was super excited to talk about it, and that's why I found the perfect opportunity to welcome back an old friend, old guest of the show, Aaron Bronstetter of TSN Sports. And Aaron, we'll start you out with the really tough questions. I don't know if you're a fantasy football player, but if you are, any big waiver wire pickups happening tonight?
Oh, yeah. Brandon Marshall from the Seahawks. Right. I mean, Doug Baldwin's out for a little while, so pick him up. And the backup tight end for Carolina, I think his last name's Thomas. Give him a look, because Greg Olsen's gone for a long time. Cam Newton's been known to use his tight ends, and I think he's worth a look as well. There aren't a ton of enticing ones this particular weekend. I mean, of course, unless you can get Josh Connor, which I don't think is in too many leagues, but if you can get him, pick him up.
So I am in a league with Spencer Kite. He have UFC.com and used to write for The Province, just recently wrapped up.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. I actually invited him into this league too a few seasons ago. And he was talking to me on the chat before, and he was just mentioning how he picked up Connor in a couple other leagues to kind of cover in case Bell was out, the Le'Veon Bell was out the first week, and he was. And I'm just like, oh, it's a good idea. I was just kind of saying, I was joking. Yeah, I'll make a note of that. And I kind of had made a note of it anyway. And then I completely forgot to draft him. And of course, he goes off for this huge week. So yeah, Spencer Kite was well ahead of the curve on that one. But yeah, my teams went 0-3 this past week, but it is still early in the season, of course, as they say.
Yes, sir. I'm 1-0, and then I have another league where we drafted on the day of opening night, and for whatever reason, week one doesn't count. So I have Josh Connor in that league, so of course, but that week one doesn't count. So
week one doesn't count. Interesting.
Yeah, because I guess we drafted a little too late, but it's unfortunate.
Gotcha. Are you a Run the Jewels fan?
Oh yeah, big time, man. I guess you saw my Skype
logo. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah.
Yeah, I celebrate their entire collection as Michael Bolton, the guy says to Michael Bolton in Office Space.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Excellent. Excellent stuff. Wow, we found all kind of interesting stuff about you. And I tell you what, Aaron, since we last talked quite some time ago, you've become quite the sensation with I see now your videos every major UFC event. You're the guy now that talks to Dana White and get some good interviews. And obviously you do interviews with all these other fighters as well, but it's always great on, you know, Thursday, Friday ish. All of a sudden we see this tweet from you saying, oh, here's a bit of news. And then here's a little snippet of interview and it comes a few minutes later. So I tell you what, man, you have done some great work and really getting the name out there. Well done.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate that. You know, it was probably about 8-9 years ago, I was booking you for Mauro Ranallo's show.
That's right.
Which I produced back then, the MMA show. So to go from there to where I am now is it's great. And I mean, I owe it to guys like Mauro who you know really got me into the sport and from an early stage in my career. And I've really gotten rabid when it comes to MMA. I love covering it. I love being at ground level with during fight week for the pay-per-views. And it's just been a real joy to cover.
And I mean, to get those few minutes with Dana, considering he doesn't do those scrums really anymore, they're very rare, and that he just doesn't do a lot. That the fact that even you get a few minutes, that's a huge win for you and obviously for the network as well. It's great stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it helps that we cover the UFC.
Yeah.
Carry the UFC in Canada, so that kind of gets us some access in that regards. But you know, when I talk to Dana, and I say this to people, and it sounds very simple, but I always ask him what I would want to know the answer to. You know, as somebody who follows the sport so closely, I always want to ask him things that, you know, if I was watching an interview with Dana White, what would I want to hear from him? So that's kind of what my mantra is when I talk to him.
Yeah, and that's one of the shames of him not doing those scrums anymore is because he used to be able to talk a lot more freely about just, to that point, things that people would want to know about. I remember, covering events as I've done in the past when he used to do those before shows, you know, via the pre-fight press conference, usually on Thursday, sometimes Wednesday, and then obviously the post-event, you know, he would just shoot the shit, really, you know, and you would just ask him about different stuff. And granted, he was going to be guarded about some things, but it was a insightful look into kind of how that part of the business was run and obviously, you know, very honest about things, sometimes at a detriment to himself. But that was, that was a fun era. And I always think about, you know, covering the sport for the past almost 10 years or so, 10 plus years. I always kind of remember that just, it was like, it felt so honest and everything. And obviously things have changed, but yeah, even a little bit of insight into what you get is, provides insight to other people, even if it's just for a few minutes. So yeah, it's good stuff.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
So we had a big event this past weekend. I don't know about you. Obviously, you know, covering an event, I think the feeling is a little bit more excitement than maybe, you know, everyone kind of being at home. Were you kind of really into this event going into Dallas, or were you kind of like I was? You're kind of like, we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, I was. I didn't think that the card was anything too spectacular in terms of depth. I knew that there were some very good fights on the card, but the main event really kind of captured my attention. Seeing Darren Till and what he was able to accomplish in just the span of a year. I mean, it was a year ago Friday, which was weigh-in day, that they had announced that he was going to be fighting Cowboy Cerrone. So if you think of how far he's come in that year and the amount of confidence he shows, he's undefeated, 25 years old. There was just a lot of intrigue around him. Now, I wasn't one of the people that really drank the Kool-Aid and thought that he was going to beat Tyron Woodley. I know a lot of people did. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that he was going to be able to. And I mean, I didn't think the fight would be that lopsided. But you know, it was still great covering Darren and getting to speak with him. I find him to be a very genuine person who just gives a lot of good quotes. I mean, let's be real. That's kind of what we're in this for. He gives a lot of good quotes and a lot of good insight on what's going on in his mind. So just covering that particular fight, and I did a feature for SportsCenter on Darren, and after doing that, I was really kind of invested in him. And that main event really kind of got my juices flowing leading up to that event. And I mean, it helped also that there was no event in the week. I always find that when there's a pay-per-view and there's no fight night the weekend before, that I'm always that much more excited about it.
Yeah, because it gives time for the previous week's events, as it were, to breathe, and also a chance to delve a little bit deeper in the card. Now, Grant, we're talking about, you know, Darren Till in the main event. But I mean, I think that's one of the things that, you know, there's this whole like conversation about too many events. And I think we all kind of know that there seems to be just way too many events. Part of that is because, again, in the past is that we used to be able to spend more time learning about some of these fighters. And that's kind of what helps the promotion of these guys and girls later on, is it gives chance to be like, oh, that's interesting. That is something that relates to me, or this may be something that relates to my readers or viewers or something along those lines. And yeah, like I said, it's time to breathe. And that's what I miss a lot about, you know, having less events, is you get to know some of these people. So then it was, okay, I have to watch from the start to the finish because I know about this fighter and this fighter, this fighter, and this is what really pulls me in. And, you know, granted, the show had a little bit more of that with, you know, Diego Sanchez and Jim Miller a little bit further down the card. But that's, giving a little bit more time to understand these people is such, you know, so valuable. And, you know, I wish these promotions spent a little bit more time doing that.
Well, it's valuable to the consumer, but I think that when you're in the content business, like the UFC is, mm-hmm. The more deliverables you have, the more of an advantage you're in when it comes to selling that content. And I think that that's something that a lot of us kind of fail to grasp when it comes to the card. I do agree with you that if there was more time to breathe, there were less guys on the roster, there were less events, that we would get a little bit more enjoyment out of it. But at the same time, if you're going to an ESPN, for example, and saying, you know, we're going to give you 15 cards this year, they're not going to offer you as much money as if you say we're going to give you 45 cards this year. Plus, we're going to give you the Contender Series. Plus, we're going to give you some shows. You know, the more deliverables you have, the more you can make off of them. So, mm-hmm. you know, when they do kind of these events in the smaller cities that are a little bit lower overhead in terms of the salaries, in terms of the arena size, in terms of the gate, you're still getting a lot of value. I mean, I believe it was, I can't remember if it was Dave Meltzer, but somebody wrote that each event, you know, with ESPN, they're going to make $10 million for. Mm-hmm. So you do need to remember that there is, a financial and business aspect to everything that the UFC does. So for them to whittle down the amount of cards and whittle down the amount of divisions, even though it would kind of, you know, appease a lot of the older school fans who are used to that, that's not really in their best interest business-wise, in my opinion.
Right. No, I would agree. Yeah, we're definitely in the content era for sure. The UFC deal, WWE, and also Bellator, this new deal with DAZN that's starting up rather soon, is all about filling hours and getting niche fans. And yeah, I mean, I think these, you know, ESPN Plus, I talked about this is a few months ago when this, you know, the deals first came out, it makes sense for, you know, DAZN and for ESPN Plus to get in bed with some of these companies like UFC and Bellator, because their fans are used to paying for product, you know, and they're that's so hard to do. You can't go to baseball fans. You know, obviously they have with like, at bat, and then some of these other, NBA has their league pass and things like that. Yeah, and then the NFL game, Sunday ticket, whatever. But it's for fight fans, you know, content and just how things go. We're a perfect group to come after because we're used to, you know, 6 hour long shows and paying for content. So yeah, it definitely makes sense for them to do that.
Yeah, but you know, the pay per view model could change. That's the thing that I think they can really make a big difference on, is instead of doing 12 a year, if you did 6 a year, 4 a year, and made them really spectacular, mm-hmm. I think that would be good too. But then again, if you do the math, I know that they have people that do the math. So if they do the math and they think, you know, 12 is better than 12 good pay-per-views is better than 6 great pay-per-views or 6 really high grossing pay-per-views, then, that's their business. And I think that that's why there are so many, because really, if you think about it, if you took the best of the best guys that the UFC had, minus Conor McGregor and minus Brock Lesnar, you put all those people on one card, I don't think it does that much better than what they're getting on a monthly basis. That's the thing that we need to remember. There are certain superstars in this sport that will always draw the attention, like a Conor, like a Brock Lesnar, but and maybe a John Jones. But even John Jones, I don't think, is a proven commodity pay-per-view-wise. So if they just keep doing 12 pay-per-views a year or whatever, just 13 pay-per-views a year, and they get an average of 200,000 or 250,000 buys, it might be better than doing 6 pay-per-views a year and doing an average of 450,000 buys just financially. So I think that that's something that we need to consider, because they also do need to satiate different markets in terms of where they're going to be bringing these major cards.
Yeah, well, with we've seen some of the shows that they stack up, right? And they don't do as well. I mean, look at the Cormier and Miocic pay-per-view, mm-hmm. and yep. these cards, which are just, you know, top to bottom low, but even on the pay-per-view portion, and they don't do as well as maybe you know, one that may just have it, just the headliner on top, for example, you know, a much bigger fight on top. And it's crazy to think about, because again, as fight fans and people that really follow this so deeply, you know, we're looking at those things like, okay, where's the value here? And look, be like, look, there's 5 fights stacked on top. There's a couple great fights here on the prelims. This is no doubt well worth a pay-per-view to buy. Whereas, you know, the people that we don't, that are kind of far outside our bubble, they're just looking for what's going to be the most interest to me. I don't really care about this. I don't care about this. You know, and that's kind of like, that's really kind of the holy grail, trying to figure out buy rates and trying to figure out ratings, is what's going to matter to the people that we don't interact with on a daily basis. And that can be I look back at the return of George St. Pierre. When the talk was, you know, there didn't feel like there was a lot of buzz going into that fight with him and Bisping. Granted, it was at MSG, but it seemed that there was something missing. And then that show does great numbers on pay-per-view. And he just revived this very quiet group over here that remembered him and decided to hit buy on the pay-per-view button. And they did great numbers. I mean, that's the thing. I think there's this group that we're constantly trying to figure out, and it's really tough to figure them out these days, I think.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a balancing act. Like, I think if the UFC did Tito versus Chuck, it would do good numbers. But I also think that if you do that, a lot of your diehard fans are like, you're going to put these two old guys in the cage together and see what they can do? I mean,
yeah.
I think that we, you know, the UFC tries to be as realistic as they can about their fan base. I think that the second CM Punk experiment was a bit of a disaster for them. I don't think that anybody cared. So we saw what happened the first time. I don't think that anybody expected much difference the second time. And I don't think that it really added that much to that card in Chicago in terms of buy rate. But, you know, I think that you got to throw stuff at the wall sometimes and see what sticks. See if you can draw in that crowd, because they do need to take risks in that regard.
Did you hear Punk's interview with Ariel on Monday?
You know, I haven't yet. I'm planning on listening to it tomorrow. It's been the Jewish high holiday, so I kind of disconnect for those days. I'm going to go and check that out tomorrow.
So one, when he talks about, you know, I don't want to spoil the interview for you.
I did read some quotes, so you won't be spoiling much. The quotes I imagine were probably the best quotes from the interview.
Yeah.
I kind of look for a Cliff's Notes of Ariel's show if I'm not able to tune in. So be my guest.
Yeah. So the thing that really stood out to me the most was Ariel was asking about if he was interested in fighting again. And when he responds, notice he has a long pause, and he says, I think so. Like how he says that, for people that heard the interview we're having, go back and listen. It's linked on our site, and obviously it's available on YouTube, whatever. But he wasn't immediately like, of course, yeah, I'm going to do this. And it sounded for a while that fighting is just kind of part of this roulette wheel of stuff that he does. And it's kind of like he spins the wheel. It's like, I'm doing comics. He's filming a movie right now. And he's just, I think we kind of get the idea last time. He's just not a fighter. This is something that he just happens to do. And he mentioned, you know, in the conversation, they said, you know, he's like, it would make sense. It probably would make sense, to paraphrase, it probably doesn't make sense for me to fight in the UFC again, but we'll see. And he knows that he has a value to other promotions. So he can be, you know, he can pick and choose where he goes if those opportunities come available. He's not necessarily going to go down to, you know, an untelevised promotion or fight on Access TV or something like that. So I found that kind of interesting and telling at the same time. At this point, I don't think he should fight in the UFC. I think we kind of saw that, unless it's, again, a contender series or something like that. I don't know if he has interest in doing that at this point. But it just, I... he just doesn't sound that interested in making this a full-time profession. As the people that you talk to all the time and we see compete week in, week out, if you're going to do it, you got to do it. And I just don't think his heart's really interested in doing this to the level that, you know, that you need to do to actually win and make an impression in the sport.
Well, I'll tell you this. If I'm him, I'm asking for my release from the UFC and I'm getting on Twitter and chirping at Logan Paul and seeing what happens. Yeah. And I'm, it's not even a joke. Like get on that, put together a pay-per-view similar to the one that he had and sell pay-per-views, sell whatever, a million pay-per-views at $10 a pop or something. Get your name out there, whatever. You're an 0-2 UFC fighter. You tried it. At least I got in the cage, blah, blah, blah. You can make it into a promo material. This Logan Paul guy seems to think that his grappling background from when he was in high school or whatever is going to translate to something. But I mean, you're not going to put that guy in the UFC if after seeing what happened with CM Punk. Why not have the two of them duke it out? And if the UFC wants to put that on, I don't think anybody's going to say, well, you know, if they say this is just a special attraction fight, these guys don't really have a future in the UFC. Yeah, maybe. I don't know if the diehards would drink that Kool-Aid. I'm sure a lot of you know, non-diehards would be in, but it's a little bit of a risk, you know, risky assessment for the UFC. So if CM Punk was able to get his release from the organization and say, listen, I'm not going to sign with Bellator. I want to do this Logan Paul thing. It's going to make me some money. You know, you guys made money off my back. Let me do this. I'm sure that they would be amenable to that. So who knows? But that's what I would do if I was him.
Isn't it amazing that Logan Paul, KSW fight or whatever the guy's name is, I didn't even know this was going on until I saw this hashtag on Twitter on that Saturday afternoon. And they did. I mean, they did so many buys. I was absolute. And they sold out Wembley in England. I was just like,
it's crazy, right?
I was amazed by. I was just absolutely amazed by this. You know, and pay-per-view is not dead. It's just if you can find something that's of interest, and we're going to find this out in just a few weeks, McGregor and Khabib. If you put on a fight that people are interested in seeing, they'll pay. And I've never heard of KSW in my life. Logan Paul, I've heard of just because that unfortunate, you know, Japanese, how they call it, the suicide forest or what have you, and just how that whole thing. And he just, you know, he's just a drip anyway. But, you know, he was able to generate a ton of business for fighting on pay-per-view. This was on internet pay-per-view. This is just like, it completely blew my mind. And I think it did for a lot of other people as well.
Yeah, it was very surprising. But and like you, I had heard about it beforehand. But then when it was happening, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. And then when I saw what the numbers were, because I don't know who either of these fellows are. The only thing I knew about Logan Paul was that he filmed a dead guy on his right. YouTube channel and got some heat for that. But that's all I knew about them. And I don't know who KSI is, or KSW, as you put it, the Polish MMA organization.
Oh, that's right, KSI. Yeah, KSW. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, KSW. Yeah. I want to talk about, a little bit more about this past week, and my biggest takeaway, and I think it was for a lot of people, was kind of just the emergence of Tyron Woodley as essentially undeniable at this point. And granted, he had a lot of momentum going in, but it's just always just kind of this weird cloud and stigma about, you know, who he is to the promotion, how fans interact with him, and just kind of just the guy that's just been dismissed as just, I not want to say go away heat, but there's just something about him a lot of people just don't like. And even though he wins, he's stays. I would invite people, the best explanation, Luke Thomas did at the top of his MMA hour show on Monday on the way, and just really did a good job of summing him up and kind of like, you know, what else does he need to do to get your respect? And he went in there and he beat Darren Till, a guy that just, when they stood toe to toe at the press conference last month, and it was just, you see how Darren Till just towered over this guy, just the arms and all this stuff. And it was just like, Tyron's going to have a tough time getting in there. And he made it look easy. And he's beaten guys of all these different backgrounds. And, you know, I don't necessarily agree that he's the best welterweight of all time, but he is, he is something to watch now. And I can't believe I'm saying this. I am super interested to see who he fights next.
I honestly think, I was saying this all fight week, even before the fight, I think that Tyron gets a level of enjoyment out of the disrespect. And when I say enjoyment, it almost sounds masochistic, because he is a guy that I think likes having the deck stacked against him. He's a guy that I think likes being doubted. I don't think he will ever get the respect that he deserves or that he is due until after his career is done. because I just think that he likes to complain about being disrespected, and that makes people disrespect him, because people are always like, well, why do you got to always talk about that? And if you ask any fighter or anybody that covers the sport, nobody disrespects this guy. It's almost an illusion. But he's been managed to convince the fans to disrespect him and to underestimate him. For whatever reason, Dana White seems to not like the guy. I mean, he was talking trash about him the night before he headlined a pay-per-view and then didn't do post-fight media. So for whatever reason, he doesn't seem to like the guy. I don't know if he's a difficult guy to negotiate with. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is undeniable how good this guy is. He's been good for a long, long time. He's beaten guys. I mean, people look at the height situation with Darren Till, but Stephen Thompson's around the same height. Damian Maia's a big guy. Like, this isn't a guy who's shied away from fighting these big guys. He keeps beating all these weird southpaws that do all kinds of incredible things, and he makes it look easy. I thought that the first Stephen Thompson fight, the one that was a draw, he clearly won. And I thought the second fight he won as well. The Maia fight, he destroyed him. And then, of course, there's this fight. I don't know what's going to happen with this Colby Covington fight, but I just don't see where Colby Covington is able to beat this guy.
Right.
I cannot see a path, a very good path for Colby Covington. Really, the only one that I think would make sense is just throwing a ton of volume at him, hope not to get knocked out, and win on volume. But even that, I think, would be a very tall task against someone like Tyron Woodley.
Yeah, so since he's been in the UFC, I mean, this is a pretty impressive run. This is back in starting 2013 after the Strikeforce merger. Wins over Huron, Koscheck, Condit, Stun Gun Kim, Kelvin Gastelum, Robbie Lawler, Stephen Thompson. There was a draw against Thompson, Damian Maia, and then recently Darren Till. Just two losses, one against Rory McDonald. Decision, and then Jake Shields as well. And then before that, obviously, the loss to Marquard, but he beat Jordan Meehan, who was a pretty good prospect at the time, Tarek Safadine, Paul Daly right in a row. And just he's had a really, really, really impressive run. And I think, the second Thompson fight, I think, kind of hurt, obviously, a little bit, because that fight was pretty dull and tough to watch at times. The Maia fight was... it wasn't the most exciting fight, but he took a guy that is, you said he just dominated him and basically just someone like Maia, who's so skilled at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and we've seen what he's done and had that super run. I mean, he looked like it was his first day in the UFC, he just dominated him. And again, Darren Till, size advantage, he's able to take these advantages and just take them away. And part of it, I think there's probably a lot of surprise when he knocked out Robbie Lawler. I was surprised by that. Obviously, he's shown power before, but Lawler had really kind of grown this since the return of the UFC, really had this, I want to say, mythic stature, but he really became a super fan favorite. Dana White loved him. There was just something about him that was just so fun to root for and cheer for and kind of be like, this is a really fun guy, this kind of resurgence he's had. And then when he derailed that, I think there was a lot of vitriol about that. And I've heard that this point made before, so it's not original. But I think there might be something to that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, again, if you look at this fight with Till, it was just such a master strategy that in that first round, like I knew exactly what he was doing. You know, Darren is the type of guy that likes to feel guys out, likes to figure out what's gonna, where he's gonna find his strengths. And Tyron was just doing all kinds of things that he's never done before. He just was completely overloading Darren Till's computer. Because Darren Till's looking at him, he's like, I've never seen this guy do this before. And he was doing great things at distance. He was controlling the range. He was shooting in for random doubles that he's never really done that before. And then when I interviewed Darren after the fight, I said, in the first round, you said you were trying to feel him out and then you were going to try to figure out what he was doing and do something in the second. But the stuff he was doing in the first round, I've never seen him do before. I think he was doing that purposely to kind of throw you off. And he agreed with me. So I think it just goes to show that Tyron's fight IQ is really, really high. And I think, that's taken time. Because if you look at his fight with Shields, that was a fight IQ loss. Because Shields was able to outsmart him. And same with Rory. Very similar situation. Where those guys were able to, be a little bit more wily than him. And I think he learned a lot from that. And I think that's when he learned that he needed to make sound business decisions with his career, sound matchup decisions with his career. And I think another thing that really soured him to the fans was that he kept calling for these super fights. He kept calling for GSP or Diaz. Mm-hmm. And people just thought he was trying to take the easy way out. Not that fighting GSP is the easy way out. But, you know, if people think that he's the number two welterweight of all time behind GSP, what does he need to do to be number one? Does it just need to beat Usman and Ponzinibbio? Like, who? What will it take? Because George St. Pierre is held in such high esteem by fans of the sport and people who follow the sport. That I'm just not sure he's ever going to be able to be, especially at his current age. I think he's 35. Like, how many more years of greatness can he have where you can say this guy's for sure has had a better career than George St. Pierre? I just don't know, because we also look back more fondly on those from yesteryear.
I think that the Covington fight makes the most sense. And if UFC really wants to get behind him and really wants to try to make some money and make him into a much bigger thing, I think there's no better opponent right now than Covington. Obviously,
oh, that's the fight.
Yeah, that's the fight. Yeah, I mean,
Dana White said it was the fight too, and I don't think anything else makes sense. You've already got a built-in storyline, built-in heat. He was just the interim champion. Like, who else are you going to put in there?
Right. Yeah, and I mean, Kamaru Usman is a great story, and obviously, I think he'll get his opportunity, but. Yeah, if you're able to do that for Madison Square Garden, great. I think maybe more realistically that maybe that end of the year show, you do a double co-headliner with the Cyborg and Nunes fight, perhaps something where you try to make this just a big, big deal. And that's, you know, that's going to be UFC's chance to really kind of get behind him. And I think, you know, it's easy for fans to say they don't promote certain fighters because they're not really sure how the machine works. But that's UFC's chance to really get behind a guy and say, this is the fight. This is the guy. And, you know, have Colby just heal it up for a couple months, get people fired up. And I think to your point, I don't see how Covington beats him unless Woodley gets injured. I think Woodley's skill set is so high right now and so many tools in the toolbox. He'll be able to, you know, easily take care of whatever Covington has to dish out. And if he's able to dish out a beating on him, one that's, you know, satisfying to watch, so to speak, I think that just puts him in much bigger position to call out a name like GSP in you know, 2019, depending on where GSP is at his career, of course.
God, Colby's brilliant. People laugh at me when I say that, but the guy's just brilliant. He's so, not only does he play the heel, but he plays it in such a cringeworthy way.
Yeah.
That it makes people hate him even more. Like he's like a heel is not good at being a heel. And people like that annoys people even more than if he was good at being a heel. So he actually is out healing people. If that makes it, I don't know if that makes any sense. I mean, you're working for Wrestling Observer. I don't know. Are there any examples of guys that try so hard to be heel in wrestling that and they're so bad at it that they actually become more hateable?
Yeah,
that's what he does. That's what he's almost like the reverse of what The Rock when he was a good guy when he was Rocky Maivia. He was trying so hard to be this good guy and people hated him. He's trying so hard to be a bad guy that people hate him even more.
Yeah,
he sucks at being a heel. He sucks. It's like, who cares? He's now making people even angrier.
I think the thing that with Covington always gets me is in some of the last interviews I saw, you know, you can tell he's rehearsed these lines and he has these lines in the back of his head. And when he's talking, and he's probably he's getting better and better at it because he's trying to kind of, you know, absorb more of the persona. But you can tell, like, he's just like, he can't contain his laughter as he's saying the lines.
He does this weird smile at the end.
He does.
It's almost like this, like, you're buying this, aren't you? Are you buying this? Yeah. I love it. I honestly think it's great. I've got some friends who are pretty staunch liberals, and I kind of am myself, you know, in terms of how I lean politically.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not going to get taken in by this. I just think it's funny. Like, I mean, there are some people that find this so offensive. They find it so, like, he angers them so much. They think that he's like this total racist and this total. And I'm just thinking, like, wow, you just lost. Like, you just drank the Kool-Aid.
You know who go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
So I was so Punk actually was asked by Ariel, actually asked him what he thinks
about this,
coming
to see.
Yeah. And he basically said that, he basically, you know, he thinks that Trump's racist and he gave, you know, kind of some thoughts on that, but that he didn't really like the shtick and he just that, you know, he said associating with that is racist and he didn't really straight out call Covington racist. And he said, you know, a nuanced discussion like this deserved a nuanced answer and he really didn't have one, but he basically just said that anyone that kind of aligns themselves with Trump is essentially getting in that same boat. And to your point, yeah, I mean, politically, I can go either way at times, but I think obviously, you know, what Trump is, the way the country is right now is just a complete disaster in a lot of ways. And he's not helping things by any means, but I think he's just like this. There's a wrestler, and I can't remember what his name is. He's been doing this for a while, that basically he wrestles down in Mexico a lot. He's a white guy that basically is kind of like not the border patrol, but kind of like pushes that whole like MAGA agenda type thing. And he's like the right wing hardcore right winger. He plays a character, and that's what Covington's doing. It's hard to get offended at him because it's funny, you know. And granted, some people do get sucked into it, but I think there's most of us like you and me and others that are like, we get what's happening right now. And it's interesting because he's whipping people up into a fervor enough where it's like, that could actually potentially main event a pay-per-view in 2018. If you had said that back in January, I would have said, oh my God, the UFC is in rough shape if that's main eventing. But I can't wait to see that fight. You know, I can't wait to see it.
Well, do you know who his strength and conditioning coach is, Colby Covington?
Not off the top of my head. Who is it?
It's Stevie Richards.
Oh, that's right.
Blue World Order.
Yes.
And they workshop these things together.
Yeah.
You know, like Colby said this to me in an interview back before like all this stuff happened. Like it was right when he was kind of on the cusp of it was before he fought Maya, and he was starting to throw everybody under the bus. He was, you know, and I mentioned Stevie Richards. He says, yeah, me and Stevie Richards, we talk about this stuff all the time. And that's kind of where he's getting it from. Like he has got, and I mean, Dan Lambert, who's his manager, is a huge pro wrestling guy. He's appeared on TNA Wrestling. Mm-hmm. You know, he just has these people around him that I think are helping him workshop this character.
That's right. I remember.
And it's honestly why I think it's brilliant, because I wish that more people in MMA took this kind of pro wrestling approach. I mean, there's a lot of carryover from old time wrestling fans that have become MMA fans, because it is a similar premise. Like it's a person versus a person. And, you know, some people like this person, some people like that person. And ultimately you want to see your guy win. That's basically what it comes down to from a promotional standpoint. I mean, when it comes to the sport itself, we're talking about very, very intelligent fighters with incredible skill sets with, you know, this is a chess match. Like the MMA is no joke. The amount of studying that has to go into how you're going to solve this puzzle that's in front of you, I mean, it can't be underestimated. But at the end of the day, you know, there is, I think, a segment of these fans that's like, I like this guy, I want him to beat this guy. And that's all they really care about. And I think Colby is really pandering to that kind of fan.
Absolutely. No, I would agree. It's the framework is very similar. And then, yeah, you hit it on the head there.
I'm speaking to him in about 12 hours time, actually, Colby. So,
oh, you are.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Oh,
very good. Send him my regards, of course. So a couple of other thoughts. 228, what coming out of the event, what other standouts come to mind? Obviously, it was a night of a lot of great storylines, big finishes, fun card overall. What would you take away from the show?
Well, the craziest thing to me, and I was backstage, so I can tell you a little bit of a story that I did bring up in an interview. Tatiana Suarez runs through a person who was a former champion, whose name I can't remember, because she destroyed her, Carla Esparza.
Yeah.
Destroys Carla Esparza. Runs through her. I mean, that could have been 30-25 if it actually went to the decision. That was a one-sided, you know, a totally lopsided fight. I think Carla's the second best wrestler in the division, and Tatiana destroyed her at that game. So I'm backstage. Tatiana's just won. She heads to the back, and Jessica Andrade walks by her, and they're friendly, but she gives her this look like, you're going to steal my title shot if I don't do something about this right now. Like, I want to fight for the title, and you just made yourself look incredible on TV, not on pay-per-view, on TV, where more people are watching. So I've got to do something. And then she goes out and smokes Karolina Kowalkiewicz. One punch knockout in the strawweight division. I saw Jedi Goodman, who I follow on Twitter, mm-hmm. said that it was the first KO in the women's strawweight division since like May or something, when Tatiana Suarez got the KO. And then it's like 90 minutes later, one punch KO from Andrade. And I mean, that title shot's Andrade's now. Like, you can't make a case for Suarez after watching that fight, can you? I don't think so. That's really what captured my attention at that card, was like, these are like strawweights that are all in the mix for the title. Kowalkiewicz has beaten Rose before. So has Carla Esparza. And then they have their opponents that want to get their first crack at Rose. So, I mean, Andrade looked absolutely amazing, and so did Suarez. So, and I think Suarez is going to be a future champion. She's unbelievable, but is she going to be able to beat someone like Andrade? Like, Andrade is just, she's been a buzzsaw since she lost to Joanna back in Dallas last year. You saw what she did to Gedalia. She's just crushing people. So that's really what captured my attention from that event. And then, of course, there were all those crazy knockouts. A lot of these guys didn't get performance bonuses that would have gotten one on almost every other card. You saw Al Hassan, his first round knockout. You saw that crazy kick from Jeff Neal. It's just so many different incredible performances throughout the night. And I feel bad for a lot of these athletes because they're not going to get these bonuses. And then of course, even on the non-televised portion on Fight Pass, you saw Pudilova against Aldana. And that was one of the best female fights ever. It's just a volume fest. Like, I think I saw a stat today that two of them, I think it was each of them had more strikes landed than any combined fight for the rest of the night, which is pretty impressive. So
yeah,
that was a crazy. Did you get to see that fight? That was early on in the card.
I did. I actually watched it today, and it was
phenomenal.
Yeah, it was really good. It was one of those. It was a fight made at the last minute because I think Pudilova was a last second replacement, if I remember right.
Really, yeah, I think so.
Short notice. Yeah, I would agree. Suarez has been on my radar for a bit, and I can't remember if it was the. I was looking at a record, the her first fight against in the UFC, coming off the tough show against Amanda Cooper, or if it was the Alexa Grasso fight that really stood out. I remember picking her in that fight. She, her size stands out, and she just, she goes in there, she fights confidently, and a lot of fighters don't do that. They're just hesitant, or they're just there's. She has something in her. She just has this just this air of confidence, and when she gets you, she gets you, and it's tough. It's physically, she's just really impressive. She's young. She has she's fought back from cancer. It just she's people that have come from adversity like that and just these life threatening situations, and then they go compete in a sport. It's like what possibly bad could happen to me in this sport right now? what's the worst that's going to happen? Someone's going to knock me out or punch me or choke me out or something. Like I could have died. Right? It just it gives them a different perspective. And she's just so physically impressive, and just there's an aura there. I have no doubt she's going to hold that title within the next 2 years or less. And again, depending on how things go and life gets crazy, but she has it. She absolutely has it. And then you mentioned obviously Jessica Andrade giving, and that was a great story. Doing the one upping. I mean, the fact that she easily just knocked out. And just the way she came out against Karolina Kovalkiewicz, that was super impressive. And now this women's strawweight division, now that Joanna is just kind of like, we don't know where she's at. There's so much more interest in seeing these other women compete for the title right now than Joanna. But you have some depth there. And that's when I remember when Bantamweight, I think it was Bantamweight, when it really got some nice depth after a couple of years in existence in the UFC, it was like, wow, we have all these interesting matchups up and down the stack, and especially near the top. That's when a division, it becomes really fun to follow a division and have these options and have these debates. But I wish every division was like that. But women's strawweight right now is really building some depth, and it's great to see.
Yeah, remember those days when Bantamweight had a contender? That was fun.
No kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, strawweight, I think, it's a really, really fun division. And on the Suarez front, she's also such a nice person. Like, she comes backstage, she just has the performance of life. She compliments my shoes. It's like usually after you win a fight, you're so locked in. And she's like, she's doing well. She's happy. I go and talk to her coach. Like, oh, man, she's amazing. And they were like, she can get better. It's like, really? She can? It's like, oh, well, that's problematic if you're in the strawweight division.
Also, speaking of bantamweights, Aljamain Sterling, I thought looked amazing against Cody Stamann, and he's a guy. I was just I was thinking about this in this fight that these sometimes with prospects when they come in, especially get a lot of buzz behind them, and they kind of stumble earlier, don't really super impress early. Some it will go one way. Some if you just give them time and give them a lot of fights, and I can't remember if they said it was his 11th fight in the UFC or something along those lines that. You give them some time, and eventually they kind of figure things out. And some will either just burn out, but sometimes it's just they just need time. And he seems to have found himself. He's obviously coming off that obviously that devastating knockout loss. that he, you know, he was essentially made a meme of, and, you know, he joked about it and he embraced it. And we've seen what happens with other fighters don't do that. And he puts himself in a position where, you know, he calls out, you know, initially call out the winner of Rivera and Dodson. And then afterwards saying he thought that fight was so boring, he doesn't want to fight either guy. But then he calls out Dominic Cruz. And I'm immediately like, I would love to see Sterling versus Cruz. I don't know if it's going to happen, but, you know, that'd be kind of fun. Those guys going at each other on the mic and all that. So I think Sterling was also a really big winner after Saturday night.
The weird thing about that submission was he pulls that crazy submission off, and I think to myself, wow, that's really cool. Like, I haven't seen anything like that before. So the way that he did it, it was almost like an inverted, non-inverted knee bar. It was very strange. And I asked him about it afterwards, and that's kind of how he described it. And then Zabit goes out and does the exact same submission, like, an hour and a half later.
I know.
like what? Did he see that? And he was like, I can do that.
Yeah.
Like, how did that come about? But as you mentioned with Sterling, you're right. You know, and I asked him about that knockout against Moraes and how since then he's been so spectacular. And he kind of walked me through that about how that was really, you know, it was a scary moment for him, but he was able to kind of take that and channel it into something positive. And he's been fighting differently. He's been fighting with a different approach. So yeah, I agree. I think that bantamweight division, the crazy thing about that is like, they're like four or five people in the mix for that title right now. So that division's starting to get really crowded at the top.
So we'll wrap with this. I don't know if you knew this, but covering MMA often requires you to have a legal degree. And I hope you've been boning up on the studying and the books, because Michael Chiesa sued Conor McGregor and a bunch of other people, Dave. Have you heard about this yet?
Yes, yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. So, yeah, so Michael Chiesa, for those that don't know, obviously you're hearing this on Wednesday. This happened on Tuesday afternoon that Chiesa, and this is no big surprise. We kind of knew that something was going to happen with some of these fighters. He sued Conor McGregor, McGregor Sports Entertainment, the Barclays Center, and a few other parties as well. Not the UFC, but suing all these parties. Essentially, there wasn't any, you know, financial numbers disclosed, because his attorney said in the suit that the amount that they're going to be looking for, they expect to kind of paraphrase, could not be handled in some of these lower courts. So they filed this with New York State Supreme Court. And essentially, you know, around the center of it is argument, which is an interesting one I really hadn't thought of. And I guess you talked about it earlier this summer, and I must have missed it, that by taking him out of that card, by those injuries and him being unable to fight, that essentially he took himself out of the running to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov for the interim lightweight title that, you know, Tony Ferguson had to drop out of, that Ally Quinta eventually got that spot instead.
And don't I had forget to, Holloway also dropped out.
That, oh, that's right. Yeah. Max Holloway as well. You're right. Yeah. So there was, and he was just like, that's kind of one of the key points of the suit. And I haven't even thought of that, but it'll be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out, and where there's a settlement outside of court or what happens. And again, if guys like Ray Borg try to file their own suit, or just how this plays out. But this is interesting. We haven't seen one of these before, I don't believe.
You know what, though? It is a valid point, because if you remember, the commission told Paul Felder that he wasn't going to be able to fight for the title because he wasn't ranked.
That's right,
and
yeah.
Chiesa was the highest ranked guy in the division on the card. He's higher ranked than Ally Quinta. And keep in mind that Holloway withdrawing had nothing to do with Conor. That was a weight-cutting situation where the commission said he couldn't safely cut any more weight. So if he was on that card, he would have been first in line. And if he would have made 155 pounds instead of 156, I mean, I know he ultimately ended up missing weight for his next fight against Pettis, but let's say he made 155 pounds. That could have been for the title. That could have been a title shot. And you can make that case. That is a fair argument, especially based on that Felder knowledge that we have.
Yeah, that's it's
not to mention that. Not to mention that I think the promotion probably likes Chiesa more than they like Ally Quinta as well.
Yeah,
let's be honest.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. So yeah, we'll see how this whole thing plays out, and obviously see if other people get on board.
And Chiesa beat Ally Quinta. Remember that too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, very true. Yeah, very true. Yeah, legal degrees in 2018 and 2019. I think that'd be good advice for future journalists coming down the road.
Yeah, it couldn't hurt. Always good to get that kind of knowledge and figure out more. There's always more than meets the eye with the sport. I mean, you need to know how to, file for, with different police stations and stuff like that. Like, let's say, when Nick Diaz got arrested, you want to get his mugshot, you need to know how to do that, right? So
right.
There are these are things that you do need to consider when you're covering the sport.
And final question. I know we're a few weeks away from it, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you what your prediction is, if you have one, for the biggest fight of all time, Mark Hunt versus, no, just kidding. Conor McGregor versus Khabib coming up first week of October. What are your thoughts?
I was going to correct you and say that was this weekend, right? The Mark Hunt fight, not a couple weeks away.
That's true. I messed up my own joke.
Yes. So we've got Conor McGregor and Khabib, and I really don't know which side I'm going to go with. I will say this. Khabib has not only lost a fight in the UFC, he's not lost a round in the UFC. So a lot of these people that say Conor's just going to be able to knock him out with a left, like, there's a little bit more than meets the eye here. However, if you look at that fight that Khabib had with Ayakinde, he was getting hit. He is a hittable guy. But his grappling is just, it's otherworldly. And I think that if he can get the first two, three rounds of you know, if he can dominate Conor for those three rounds, I just don't see how Conor's going to bounce back from that. But on the flip side, Conor's a guy who has been able to overcome the odds in a lot of situations when it comes to how he fights and how he's able to beat guys. And that left hand can put people away with one connection. And if Khabib keeps his chin up like he did against Ayakinta, it's going to be problematic. It could be a very short night for him. It's one of these fights where I don't have a very strong gauge either way, because I feel like either scenario is just as likely to happen. And that's what makes this fight so exciting and so interesting to me, is because I can't say emphatically either way that I think one outcome is more likely than the other. And that's, again, what, like, it's very rare that you'll hear me say I don't really have a strong gauge on this fight. I mean, unless it's something at the very beginning of a fight pass card where I haven't heard of one of the guys. But at a main event level, usually I can say, like, this is what I think is going to happen. This is how I envision it in my head. But every time I try to envision one outcome, the other one pops into my head. And it's very strange. I know that sounds very philosophical and weird, but I haven't been able to really come up with a very strong feel in either direction.
I would agree. And I will say this, and you allude to this, is that every time we count out Conor, we're like, I just can't see him doing this. Or he does, I don't want to say the impossible, but he pulls it off. And there's just this sense of self-belief. And what I'm interested in seeing is, since the last time we saw him, his life has changed completely. He's not only has he had a kid, but obviously there's everything around Mayweather McGregor, and whatever you want to say about the fight and the fact it happened, you can say it. But the fact that he was just part of this thing that was so much bigger than anything he had ever done before, in terms of promotion, in terms of money, in terms of just everything and spectacle. I don't know. I just, that mindset, I'm very interested to see how that's changed, and if it's changed, and what we see, and if he's really that interested in doing this again, or if it's just a final, c'est la vie to the sport. I don't know. You're right. Every scenario, you can find a counter scenario, and then you can find a counter scenario to that. And that's what makes this fight very fascinating. And I know a lot of people have mentioned so far, they're surprised there hasn't been a ton of promotion, been no major press conference with the two, and kind of just like wondering what's going on. I think by the time fight weeks arrives, it's going to be so buzzworthy that all that's going to be put off to the side. And, you know, this thing is going to pop a buy rate and an interest level that we have not seen in quite some time.
I actually think it's better that they haven't been doing promotion, because I think the appetite is just like, it's really satiated everybody's appetite, because we're just waiting. We're waiting on Conor. Where is he? What's taking so long for him to do something? Mm-hmm. Why isn't he out there? And I think it's just making people hungrier and hungrier and hungrier. And I think that's the thing that we've got to remember, is that for this particular fight, you know, they want people to be craving something here. And I think that if you do too many press conferences and hit people over the head with it, it doesn't have quite as much allure. But that's kind of just how I look at it.
When are you taking off for Russia?
I'm not.
Oh.
I only go to the pay-per-views, the domestic pay-per-views. So thankfully, I'm not going out to Russia, because my wife would probably kill me.
And your kids too. Yeah, heading off to Russia. Yeah. Well,
that's a hard pass.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. John Morgan is there from MMA Junkie. Yeah, no big
John
surprise.
Morgan's everywhere. John Morgan is everywhere. I don't know how he does it.
He posted a picture of what's known here as a Moscow mule. He's like, here, they just call it a mule, for those that are familiar with the drinks.
Yes, I did see that. That's clever. If there's two things John loves, it's MMA and drinking.
Oh, that's two great things. I'll cheers to that. Let the people know, if they're not following you, and I can't believe they wouldn't be at this point, where to follow you on the social media, where to watch you, listen to you, and experience all this Aaron Bronstetter. The floor is yours.
It's at Aaron Brunstetter on Twitter. If you don't know how to spell that, I'm sure Josh, if you're following him, will tweet out my handle at some point. And you can catch me on TSN. I do all of the event coverage for the major pay-per-views. TSN.ca/UFC is where you can catch most of my work.
And as I mentioned at the top, he's been doing excellent stuff. The name's getting out there more and more and more. And I won't say you could see, you heard him here first, as we did months and months ago. But, you know, I mean, all success is thanks
to
me.
It's very possible.
Thanks to me.
You might have been on the ground floor, Josh. I'm just saying.
Absolutely. I know talent when I see it. Yeah, I do it. But,
I agree with that. I agree with that.
Yeah, you've been doing awesome stuff, and we hope nothing but bigger success as it comes, and obviously as this huge event comes up in a couple weeks with McGregor Khabib. I'm sure we'll be seeing you all over that. Aaron Brunstetter, thanks so much for coming back, and again, congrats on all the success.
Thank you, Josh. Always a pleasure.
All right. Big thanks to Aaron Brunstetter for dropping by. Yes, Aaron, I will tweet out your handle when I share the link for the show. So for some reason you are, if you listen to us via RSS and you don't follow Aaron for some reason, just go to my Twitter and then you'll be able to see Aaron's information. And again, Twitter's so easy. Just start typing Aaron Brunstetter and some form of it. You'll get him pretty quickly. And yeah, like I mentioned during the show, I'm really impressed and really happy with how things have turned out for him. And one of the reasons for that, obviously, is, well, he was, you know, early on in his career, not early on his career, but, you know, early on the show had come on. But just he fills a void with these Dana White interviews and, you know, these relationships like UFC has with TSN. It's great to take advantage of those and provide that content and that, again, he fills a void with these Dana interviews that Ariel Helwani used to film, Phil, when he used to talk to Dana. And this, those 8 minutes before shows as part of Fight Weekend are so valuable. And the fact that he doesn't do the scrums anymore, just that was just, it provides insight into what's going on. And even if they're non-answers, it gives you some sort of answer, some sort of nod towards kind of what the plans are, direction, and all that as well. So continue success to Aaron and keep it up. And we'll look forward to more of those Dana White interviews, and obviously with the other fighters as well. Let's see. I think that's really about it. Obviously, as I mentioned at the top, a lot of interesting UFC events coming up as we get ready to kind of close out the year here, the last 4 months. UFC heading to Russia this weekend on Fight Pass. That's in the afternoon. And the Bellator, the Zone era begins. And I need to see if basically how to stream that to my TV. So it's crazy. I wouldn't say it's crazy, but I get so used to, is there an app on my smart TV for it? Because right now I have YouTube TV. We cut the cord months ago, almost a year ago. And so we have a Samsung smart TV that's a little bit newer. So most of nearly everything I watch is via apps, YouTube TV and all stuff. So I don't have to use a Chromecast or anything. So now it's a case of like with Fight TV, when I was looking for the All-In pay-per-view, they don't have an app for Samsung smart TV. So I'd have to stream it to my TV. And it's a question of, okay, I have to hook up one of my old Chromecasts and put that in, all that stuff and what have you. Just kind of a little bit of pain. But that's kind of where the mindset is now. It's like, what's the easiest way to watch this? I don't really, if I'm going to get a pay-per-view or get an event, I don't like to watch on my phone or watch on my laptop. I want to watch it on my 55-inch TV that I bought for this purpose. So DAZN, I need to see if they've actually put that, they have actually an app out there. If they do, if I'm going to have to set this whole thing up. So I'm sure you really enjoy hearing my technical issues, but you're going through the same thing, right? I mean, when all these app, these different services come out, what's the easiest way that you're going to be able to watch it however you want to watch it? And that's a big thing. That's a big part of releases. So if you're interested in kind of the business aspect of things, as you watch this, you know, take note of these things. How easy is it to buy stuff? Stream stuff, watch it. How easy is the player? I mean, everyone's had these experiences with WWE Network, UFC, Fight Pass, and so on, when it doesn't work how you want it. And that's frustrating. That gets people to cancel and so on. So, you know, those are just things to kind of, watch out for. So just with the zone, you know, that'll be, it's a 1 month free trial, that starts out, actually this month at launch. It may have been actually this week. $10 a month. So yeah. So along with you, listener who may be getting Bellator or getting DAZN for Bellator, we'll all be in this together and see how this service works. And ESPN Plus, I will say, speaking of streaming services, I started a subscription to ESPN Plus a few weeks ago. And the reason for that was I was interested. I'd watched some of the clips from Errol Hawani's Errol and the Bad Guy show with Chael Sonnen. And I wasn't, you know, going into this when I initially saw the press release when he was joining ESPN, I really wasn't into a show with him and Chael. Chael, I think, could be an acquired taste. And granted, he's very entertaining. But sometimes when he's not promoting a fight and he's kind of working for a promotion or doing some other stuff, I really haven't been like that impressed with him. And I know others feel the same way, especially in the commentary booth. Not great. And Paul Fontaine, one of our writers who is listening to this right now, can agree, is probably nodding his head vociferously about his World Series of Fighting run. But he and Ariel do a really good job, and I decided to give it a 1 week trial. And it's an entertaining show that they do. It's half an hour, 35 minutes every week, and also they do for the big events, pre-fight shows and post-fight shows. And for the most part, it's pretty interesting and fun to listen to. It's pretty easy to access. I still, again, can't stream it on my TV, but if I'm at work, the day job, and want to listen to something, I'll check out the show. It comes out Wednesday. So, and now ESPN Plus has combined their ESPN Insider service with Plus, so you're getting everything there. So here's what I'd say. If you're looking for a little bit more content and you like Ariel and you like Chael, or just want to try something out, try the 1 week trial for ESPN Plus and just see if you like it. I would recommend it. And again, you're going to be getting it pretty soon anyway with UFC, obviously, in January. So, you know, it's worth a shot. So I'll throw my plug out there. And again, for $5, you know, you really can't go wrong. $5, I think it's $5 a month, something like that. I got an annual subscription for 40, I think. Paid for it all at once, but you know, big spender. But I would recommend that. Thanks to Aaron Brunstetter for stopping by. Thanks to all for your listening. We had a lot of fun, and I did as well. And enjoy the fights in Russia this weekend, especially if you're there. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.